Happy New Year!
Happy New Year!
It is the season of New Year, New You. Making resolutions and plans to be different this year. Looking for a future which can be brighter and better in every way. Although by this time, 2 whole weeks into the new year, many of us have already made and broken and given up our 2025 resolutions. I don't know about you all, but I find it all exhausting. Just thinking about all the resolutions I ought to make to be healthier and more productive in 2025, I've lived long enough to know that for me, that road leads only to frustration. In recent years, as I've made a commitment to learn from theologians of color, I've come to realize that such thinking is very much a part of white colonial culture. Last week, just as I was pondering resolutions and vision for the new year, I picked up the devotional book Sacred Belonging by Cuban-American theologian Kat Armas. Yes, I've talked about her a few times. In a devotion on the cycle of time, she talks about long hours of boredom as a child, hours filled with nothing but just being, and about how countercultural that is in America today. Whiteness worships excellence, she says, and equates that excellence with a constant need to be doing more and more and getting better and better. She writes, "In the modern Western world, time is seen as linear and fixed, moving in one direction without repetition, past, present, future. Time is here and then it is gone, never to return again. The origins of linear time as we know it have been traced to empire, created by those looking to maximize investments and returns in their travel around the globe. We've learned to hurry because even our time is money, and so we rush all the way to our graves." Reading Armas reminded me of listening to Vance Black Fox, who is the ELCA Director for Indigenous Ministries, in his presentation this fall on Indigenous thought and theology. Vance also talked about how Indigenous cultures experience time as cyclical. Not as a commodity to be spent wisely or guarded against waste, but as a gift in which practices and experiences come around again and again, and all time is sacred. Therese R. Tucker, who is a minister of administration at St. Paul Baptist Church in Philadelphia and a woman of color, wrote in a recent Christian Century article, "So much of our energy is spent on getting ahead, getting respect, getting more money, getting recognized, getting clout, getting, lots of getting. And this is always associated with doing, always being busy, always striving for more. Afraid that who we are at the center of our being isn't enough." Whammy. That one gets me right between the eyes. And I don't think I'm the only one here. What if what we are really afraid of is that we just aren't good enough? Years ago, when I was a brand new pastor, I did a day of continuing education called An Ordinary Day with Jesus. I've done countless hours of continuing education since then, most of which I've long forgotten, but one section of that day has stayed with me for over 20 years. It was about hurry. And it was diagnosed me and much of the culture around us with hurry sickness, pointing out that so many of us are always rushing, always busy. When we ask one another, "How are you?" isn't there some pride to our response, "Oh, I'm so busy"? After all, being busy means being needed, being important, being valued. The course recommended that as an antidote, we practice slowing, doing things that make a diehard hurrier like me cringe, such as picking the slow lane in the traffic or at the grocery store and just taking the time needed. Things like eating mindfully or doing only one thing at a time. All of these are antidotes to hurry and really tough for multitasking doers like me. As Native writer and scientist Robin Wall Kimmerer has said, I want to unlearn hurrying. Because none of the really important things in life can be done in a hurry. You can't love in a hurry. You can't care for someone or connect with someone in a hurry. You can't pray in a hurry. I remember hearing Father Richard Rohr say once, to sit in silence in the morning until your no becomes a yes, and thinking, I will never have that much time to pray in the morning. So at this point, you may be wondering, what does all this have to do with the baptism of Jesus? In the gospel stories, the baptism of Jesus begins his ministry. He has not healed a sick person, given a stirring sermon, or performed a miracle when he hears the affirmation pouring out of heaven that he is God's beloved. And friends, the same is true for us. Many of us here were baptized as babies before we had done anything to earn love or to do enough good. At whatever age baptism is done, our Lutheran understanding says that it is based not on any worthiness or choice of the person being baptized, but entirely on the love and promise and grace of God. In baptism, God has looked on each one of us and said, "You are my child, my beloved." In baptism, we have heard those lovely words of the prophet, "Do not fear, I have redeemed you. I have called you by name, you are mine. When you pass through the waters of chaos, I will be with you. When you walk through fire, you will not be burned. For I am the Lord your God, and you are precious in my sight." And here's the thing, friends. Luther encouraged believers to remember their baptism every day and live every day out of that place of love and forgiveness and grace. It's a little like that cyclical understanding of time that I know I'm only beginning to grasp, but that to claim our baptism each day is to experience it anew, to know that we are beloved and chosen. In that same devotion on the cycle of time, Kat Armas writes, "Every week, the Jewish Sabbath begins in the evening. Reorienting our days in this way serves as a sacred reminder that our day isn't to start when we open our eyes, but when we go to bed. Our days are to begin with rest." In a culture where not even a minute must go to waste, we learn from the creation story that our value and worth doesn't come from what we produce, but from who we are. This is what rest is all about, trusting in the goodness of creation that it will take care of us. Can we learn to live in trust that we are enough because God says we are enough? Even more, God says we are beloved. Can we learn to slow down, to do the things that give us joy and share God's love in the world, but not so many things that cause us to rush and hurry and worry and be exhausted? Can we learn not to rest from our overwork, but to do our work out of a place of deep rest and trust? So, back to where I started, with New Year, New You resolutions. Nadia Boltz-Weber offers this annual reminder. There is no resolution that, if kept, will make you more worthy of love. You, as your actual self and not some made-up ideal, are already worthy. You are already beloved. Thanks be to God.
Amen. Amen.